All right, committee. So as a special reward for good behaviour so far, we've got a light issue to end the day. Question on cash flow hedge accounting of inflation risk, just to, you know, finish off the day. Am I handing over to you, Matthias, to tee it up?
That's right. Thank you, Sue. We will now move on to agenda paper 4. The committee received a submission about cash flow hedge accounting applying IFRS 9. The submission asks whether a hedge of variability in cash flows arising from changes in the real interest rate rather than the nominal interest rate could be accounted for as a cash flow hedge. In its initial consideration, the committee concluded that changes in cash flows on a floating rate instrument arising from the real interest rate risk component cannot be identified independently of changes in cash flows arising from other components. Therefore, as the committee summarized in its tentative agenda decision, the rebuttable presumption in paragraph B6.3.13 of IFRS 9, that unless inflation risk is contractually specified, it is not separately identifiable and reliably measurable, cannot be overcome based on this fact pattern, and hence cannot be designated as a risk component of a financial instrument. The committee have received 6 comment letters by the comment letter deadline. 3 comment letters were supportive of the overall conclusion. We also want to highlight that yesterday we have received additional information from a respondent that has been circulated to all committee members and posted to our public website on the comment page together with the original comment letter from Heathrow Airport Limited. 3 respondents do not support a tentative agenda decision as published, but cite different reasons for their disagreement. The main reasons are summarized as follows. The tentative agenda decision is not sufficiently linked to existing requirements in IFRS 9 and therefore represents an interpretation of the requirements. Whether an inflation risk or real interest risk component is separately identifiable and reliably measurable depends on the ability to construct a relevant zero coupon curve. Respondents are of the view that if a zero coupon real interest rate curve can be constructed, it results in a risk component that is separately identifiable and reliably measurable in any hedge relationship in which the hedged risk is inflation risk, and changes in the real interest rate directly influence contractual benchmark interest rate cash flows such as LIBOR cash flows, and these alleged real interest rate cash flows can be fixed in nominal terms. Staff have provided an analysis on the matters raised in the paper submitted to the committee for this meeting. However, we would like to emphasize that the analysis does not question the validity of an entity's risk management strategy or the potential economic benefits of carrying out risk management strategies as described in the submission. We also do not question the ability to construct yield curves in specific markets based on inflation and real interest rates. As noted in the paper, we acknowledge that one of the criteria in IFRS 9 to qualify for hedge accounting is that the proposed hedging relationship is consistent with an entity's risk management strategy, but that there are other criteria that also have to be met for hedge accounting to be applied. Our analysis therefore considers the relevant hedge accounting requirements in IFRS 9 for cash flow hedges. I will now pause to see whether the committee members have views or questions on the analysis in the paper before moving to the question in the paper. Thanks.
Thanks, Matthias. So any comments first on the technical analysis in the paper? Carsten.
Thanks. So I'm not really surprised by the feedback and the level of pushback by some respondents on this one. I think this is a complex topic, and whilst I think there are a number of aspects in this staff analysis that could be debated, my sense is that overall the staff have done an excellent job in analyzing the comment letters and addressing those in a very structured and convincing way. I'd like to highlight a few aspects of the analysis. In particular, I agree with the staff on the following. First, that for the purposes of a cash flow hedge, the existence of a zero coupon real interest rate curve is not sufficient to rebut the presumption in paragraph B6.3.13. And therefore, it makes sense that the analysis supporting the tentative agenda decision focuses on whether there is exposure to variability in cash flows of the hedged item that are attributable to changes in the real interest rate risk component. Second, that an entity's risk management strategy is only one of the qualifying criteria and is in itself not determinative of whether a hedging relationship qualifies for hedge accounting. And finally, that whilst the nominal interest rate might be indirectly influenced by the inflation rate and the real interest rate over a period of time, that there is no direct relationship between changes in the nominal interest rate and the real interest rate, even if there may be some correlation in the longer term. So on the additional comments raised by a respondent that has been posted on the ISB website this morning, I was wondering whether there may be some confusion about the application of the Fisher equation on a short-term versus long-term basis. So I would agree with the respondent that there's, of course, some relationship or correlation between interest rates and inflation in the long term. I think this is more of an issue with the fact, that this relationship may not hold in a short-term context, and it will not be possible to identify independently any real rate component, as there's no immediate or shorter-term causation. To be fair, I think the argument that there's no causation is maybe not entirely supportable in economic theory, as I think there is some causation or correlation, or at least interdependency in the longer term. So I wonder whether instead of saying that there's no causation, it may perhaps have to make it more clear that there's no direct or short-term causation or similar to address these concerns. Other than that, I think the staff analysis is overall quite convincing, and I think the staff have done a really good job in analyzing the issue and addressing the points that were raised in the comment letters. Thank you.
Thank you, Carsten. Brian.
Thank you, Sue. Similar to Carsten, I think the staff paper is very good. It's very good and clear. I also think that each iteration of the agenda decision, in my view, has kind of made it better in that each iteration is more firmly grounded in specific requirements. It has more specific references to IFRS 9. However, unlike Carsten, I did not vote for this agenda decision in our previous discussion, and I don't feel that I can quite vote for it in this discussion, so I do not think we should finalise the agenda decision. I guess I have essentially two reasons for that. One of them is that as I trace back through the history of this issue, as I look at the wording of IFRS 9 itself, I can see that the board has moved from a prohibition on identifying inflation as a eligible risk to setting up a rebuttable presumption with cautions. I can't see anything in the history of this issue or the current wording that provides, that distinguishes between fair and cash flow hedges. I do not think there is a silver bullet in IFRS 9 itself that kills off something that's trying to sneak through the rebuttable presumption, which takes me on to my second point, which is that it seems central to the argument in the agenda decision that one accepts as fact a number of points that seem to be up for debate in terms of economic or perhaps finance theory. There are some things, if I just look at the agenda decision, Carsten referred to one of them about degree of causation, where I'm a little bit surprised to see in an agenda decision assertions about economic or finance theory rather than just references to the standard. I did, because it's the sort of thing I do, I went back to the July 2011 agenda paper and found in there actually a quote from the ECB. So this is 10 years old now, this agenda paper, saying that the emergence of well-developed inflation-linked bond markets offers new possibilities for disentangling the information embodied in nominal bond yields. So, as I say, for those two reasons, whilst I respect what staff have done in a very good paper and why I think that the agenda paper has become, such that the agenda decision has become progressively better over time, I continue to find the case kind of not proven And for that reason, I don't think I can support the agenda decision. If the committee votes to approve it, then I have a couple of specific wording suggestions, but perhaps we should continue taking views on the agenda decision before we get into the wording.
Thanks, Brian. Donna.
So yes, I actually agree with Carson's points that he raised, and I think in particular, I think it was paragraph 20, where the staff says that therefore the fiduciary equation cannot be used to rebut the presumption in paragraph B6313 that inflation is separately identifiable and reliably measured only in limited circumstances. I am of the view that that is probably the crux of the, in my view, it's the crux of the whole inflation versus nominal debate with regards to cash flow hedging. And I do hear Brian's concerns about, for example, putting financial kind of theory into a staff paper. But I do feel that the reality is that when you hedge account, you do need to be cognizant of theory that goes on with behind it. And yes, even though IFRS 9 is written and we can point back to it to a certain point, you still, hedging by definition is the best way I can explain is higher grade accounting. So it really is next level thinking, and next level thinking has to be applied to hedge accounting. So therefore, I'm very supportive of the staff paper, and I'd like to just with him as well indicate my thanks for the hard work that was put into the paper to articulate succinctly the concerns that are raised and to address those issues that have been raised by market participants. I believe that I'm still of the view, though, is that, and which is exactly what I think Brian mentioned, was that there is an opportunity to inflation rate hedge, not necessarily cash flow, definitely on a fair value basis. Because from a cash flow perspective, I do have a bit of a concern about being able to get there, and the staff paper has articulated that exceptionally well. So I'm not saying that this is a total no, but I'm saying that the users or the preparers of the financials need to be understand what they're trying to get at. I just don't think we're quite there with regards to cash flow hedging. But from a fair value hedge accounting, I am very supportive that this would be achievable. But that was not the question. The question is whether we could get cash flow hedge accounting. So thanks.
Thank you, Donna. Lisa.
Thanks, Sue. So I continue to support the staff's analysis and their conclusion. And I guess for me, I really go back to the basic concept of, you know, what is a cash flow hedge? The whole purpose of a cash flow hedge is to fix the cash flows of a designated risk component. And I don't believe that you can do this by constructing a term structure on real interest rate risk, like the example has, because it assumes that the LIBOR flows only relate to real interest rate risk and inflation risk. And I think we all know that if you look at the pricing of LIBOR, LIBOR is not priced only off of those two risks. LIBOR also includes credit risk, and then it can have other components to it. So in order to designate specific cash flows related to the risk, you would have to decompose the components of those LIBOR cash flow flows. And then at that point, you could actually designate those cash flows as a risk component. So in this particular case, I based on the submission, I don't think the requirements for the cash flow head have actually been met. However, on I guess I do have sympathy here, and I must admit, I read B6.3.14 in the example many, many times over again. And I have sympathy in that, you know, preparers could be reading this paragraph, and if you just read it, it doesn't distinguish between what relates to a fair value hedge and what relates to a cash flow hedge. And so it's quite easy, I think, for someone to read this and assume that, well, if I can reconstruct a zero coupon real interest rate risk bond, then I can apply it whether or not it's under a fair value hedge or a cash flow hedge. So I guess my recommendation would be, I am supportive of the decision and the analysis and of finalizing it, but I would be supportive of recommending the board just to consider whether or not they'd want to take up a project to look at this and actually provide some more detailed guidance in how this should be analyzed under a fair value hedge and a cash flow hedge. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. Jens.
Thank you, Sue. I am too still supportive of the agenda decision as a staff paper. And I do think I agree and want to echo what Brian just mentioned, that the staff paper is really excellent and has much more arguments in it than before. I come to a different conclusion because I support the decision in the staff paper. And I do want to highlight that I just think it's really beneficial that we state that cash is in nominal terms, because I think this is relevant for this decision. And I think that we have the references to IFRS, especially 29 and IS 7. I think it's very helpful in putting some arguments against applying cash flow hedge accounting for this kind of instruments. So therefore, I'm in agreement with in the staff paper. I do have some comments, some wording comments for the agenda decision, but I'm voting on finalizing it.
Thank you, Jens. Jan?
Thank you. Do you hear me? Thank you. I just want to echo the others. As the others says, you know, I agree with the staff analysis conclusion. And they already said what I wanted to say, so I don't want to repeat them again. I just want to say that the staff paper is an excellent staff paper. Actually, I learned a lot. I was actually persuaded by the staff paper. So I want to praise that. That's all I want to say. And I want to support finalizing the agenda decision. That's all.
Thank you, Young Su. Guy.
Hi, Sue. I assume you can hear me okay this time.
Loud and clear.
Good. This is has been a very difficult issue to get one's head around, to say the least. But having spent quite some time reflecting, reading, absorbing the various iterations of the agenda decision and the comment letters and papers, I should say, it seems to me that there are two core points inherent in what is being said in our agenda decision. The first being cash is by nature a nominal amount, and therefore changes in the cash flows of an item, i.e. the nominal rate debt, attributable to a specific risk component, needs to be assessed in nominal terms. And then secondly, the nominal variable rate, such as LIBOR, cash flows of the debt, do not change as a direct result of changes in the real rate, as that real rate is not a benchmark pricing element in setting the nominal rate. And so that then begs the question of, you know, to what degree under IFRS 9 is it necessary to demonstrate that nominal rates change as a result of changes in real rates? And on that question, it strikes me that the rebuttable presumption in B6.3.13 is establishing a very high burden of proof there, having put into the standard this rebuttable presumption. Then saying in the agenda decision, as it does, that for this to be the case, the real interest rate must represent the benchmark pricing element in setting the floating benchmark rate doesn't seem unreasonable to me. When I read, you know, the discussion of risk components in B6.3.10 of the standard, both explicitly specified or implicitly specified in the cash flows of an item of which they are a part, you know, conceptually that sounds to me like, well, it is an element of the pricing of those cash flows. So to that benchmark pricing element context in the agenda decision doesn't seem unreasonable to me at all. And then the rationale that was in paragraph 42 of the latest staff paper seemed pretty convincing to me, that, you know, in this case, it doesn't appear to be a benchmark pricing element. So all of that, you know, struck me as logical. We do have this discussion in B6.3.14 of the standard that might be read to describe a circumstance where the rebuttable presumption might be overcome. But I do think I get the idea that, you know, that's talking about circumstances where you're identifying a value component of the debt. It is similar to the circumstances in B6310D for fixed rate debt and trying to identify a value component for a benchmark inherent in a fixed rate debt. And it's not necessarily explaining, whether that's sufficient to identify a cash flow component. It does seem to be describing something slightly different in B6314. And so for those reasons, it struck me that where we're landing in the agenda decision, does flow from the words in IFRS 9. And it is a reasonable reading of IFRS 9 and is not going beyond the words that exist in IFRS 9. That, having said that, I had to spend a considerable amount of time reading the papers, reflecting on the wording in the agenda decision to really glean that message from it. Accepting that message, I do have a series of comments that I think might help improve the wording of the agenda decision to help just convey those core aspects of what I think the decision is relying upon.
Okay, thanks, Guy. We'll come back to words later. John.
Yeah, just a brief comment. I thought I agree with Yung Soo. I thought this paper was did a very good job of. Taking me methodically through a rather complex issue, and I appreciate the staff's diligence in doing that and clarity in doing it. It helped me greatly to understand the issue and to kind of formulate my views. In an end, I agree with the staff's recommendation and agree with the decision to proceed. So I have nothing to add to the comments already made by my colleagues, but just wanted to express my appreciation to the staff.
Thanks, John. Bertrand.
I could have said what John just said. My comment was just to, like Yung Soo and John, to thank the staff for the clarity of their paper, which I understood. I understood the analysis. And I agree with the conclusion. And I have nothing more to add.
Thank you, Bertrand. Sophie.
I would say that I also agree, and I come back to the comment of Carsten about the causality. I believe that agree with him that I believe that we need to speak about absence of direct link, but instead of this wording that could have maybe not very clear, in fact.
Okay, so we'll come back to some wording later. Is that all right with you, Sophie?
Yes, it's okay. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. Okay, Bob?
Thank you, Sue. I would echo the comments from others. I think the staff did a very good job on this, and I agree with the staff and would move to finalize. What's important for me amongst all the analysis is, this is a cash flow hedge, and as others said, I don't see as it's fixing cash flows on a normal basis. And I think that IFRS 9, I haven't been seen enough arguments to indicate that it you can fix on a real basis and not on a nominal basis. I do have some sympathy for the issue that was raised, but I think the issue needs to be raised in more of an agenda consultation request rather than through this agenda decision.
Okay, thank you very much, Bob. Okay, so with that, I think I can ask for a show of hands from the committee on who would support finalising the agenda decision, and then I'll ask you about any wording changes to the agenda decision. So firstly, who supports moving to finalise the agenda decision?
think that's everyone on screen.
Okay, and Brian, no, on the phone.
So that's 13.
Okay. Okay, thank you. All right, so now who would like to comment on any wording suggestions for the agenda decision in Appendix A? Guy?
So maybe the core comments I wanted to raise, I think, start on page 18 of the paper. And the paragraph in the middle of the starting in the middle of the page that begins, the committee observed that cash is by nature denominated in nominal terms. The second sentence says, therefore, to meet the requirements in IFRS 9 for a cash flow hedge designation, the variability of individual cash flow streams attributed to the designated risk component. I was wondering if that might better say the variability in the cash flows of the debt attributable to the designated risk component. I think that would, in my mind, at least align better with the requirements of 6.3.7a. Then in that same paragraph, we have a sentence that says each currency unit of cash flow of a financial liability, that is each principal and interest cash flow, is equally exposed to inflation risk. I have to admit I'm a bit lost as to the relevance of that sentence to the context of this paragraph. And I was thinking that sentence could just be deleted from this paragraph. I'm not sure it does anything to address what I think is the key point in this paragraph. And then moving on, we have two underlined sentences there. The first I'm fine with. It says a nominal interest rate may be influenced by expected inflation and the real rate over a period of time. It's the next sentence that I was also wondering if we might fine tune. So in the prior paragraph, we've introduced this benchmark pricing element notion in the context of a cash flow hedge. But then we've introduced a new term in this sentence that isn't, you know, otherwise explained in the agenda decision. And, you know, I think this sentence really ties back to that notion of benchmark pricing element and that, you know, being what would then drive changes as a direct result of changes in the risk component. And so rather than this new phrase about causation, I was thinking that sentence might better read, however, nominal rates do not change as a direct result of changes in expected inflation and the real interest rate. That is, they are not benchmark pricing elements in setting nominal rates. And I thought that might create consistency with what we're saying in the prior paragraph. I think convey the point we're trying to make in this sentence and not introduce a new term in this sentence that's not otherwise explained in more detail. Maybe my next more substantive comment goes on to on page 19 where we have this paragraph about residual risk components and then the new sentence at the end of that paragraph. To me, I was just of a perspective that we might just delete this paragraph. You know, having already said, you know, we don't think it's a benchmark pricing element, you know, speaks for itself. And this paragraph just seems to, at least in my mind, kind of detract from that main message. You know, if we are to leave it in here, I think it probably would need some wordsmithing, in particular in the second sentence that's been added. But again, I think my recommendation will be to just delete it because I don't think it's necessary, having already made the points we were just describing in the prior paragraph on page 18. Those were the core points I had on the agenda decision. I had some other sort of more minor wording suggestions that I've shared separately with staff, but I think those are the more substantive points I would be suggesting on the wording in the agenda decision.
Okay, thank you, Guy. Brian.
Thank you, Sue. So I have two very specific wording suggestions that address references to IFRS 9 and the standard, and then a general observation picking up my earlier comments about having comments about finance or economic theory in the agenda decision. So my two specific kind of accounting comments, the first of those is at the bottom of page 16, where there's a paragraph discussing paragraph 6.3.7, and there have been edits proposed to that paragraph to introduce the notion of something being specific in the context of the hedging relationship. Personally, I would prefer to reverse those edits. I think the previous wording of the second sentence was a very close echo of 6.3.7 itself. Now, I understand why the staff want to have a reference to specific hedging relationships. For me, that specificity is in 6.4.1 and can be picked up later in the agenda decision rather than rewriting a sentence that is essentially a paraphrase of 6.3.7. So my first point is I would like to reverse those edits. My second point, which again is quite specific, is on page 18, the top half of the page, and it's about eight lines down in the added text, and it's just the words in brackets, in parentheses, where we have in brackets a comment that is directly observable. And it seems to me that that comment or those words are equating, now they are absolutely equating the criteria separately identifiable with directly observable. And I think equating those two things seems to be very, and potentially could have quite wide-ranging consequences. So I would like to delete the bit in brackets, eight lines down at the top of page 18. Then my third comment, and I did provide a markup to the staff separately, is just this question about to what extent, given that the committee supports this agenda decision, to what extent the agenda decision itself should necessarily be making comments about the relationship between nominal and real rates, whether or not real rates are a residual. And interestingly, Guy, in his comments, seemed to pick up on the bits of the agenda decision that gave me kind of greater pause in that sense. Firstly, in the second half of page 18, about 10 lines up, starting with the sentence, however, nominal interest rates do not change as a direct result, i.e. there's no causation. I think Carsten and others have commented on that. And then the following sentence is about the committee concluding that changes in the nominal interest rate are not attributable to changes in the real interest rate. Whereas I wonder if we could have just a much simpler sentence that is more about the committee's conclusion about the accounting, which is, for example, that the committee concluded that there is no exposure to variability in cash flows that are attributable to changes in the real interest rate in the proposed cash flow hedging relationship. You know, it seems to me that that's the thing that is within the remit of the committee to conclude. And I think we just voted collectively for that conclusion. And I understand that the discussion about the relationship between nominal and real rates has been important to that conclusion for many people. I question whether it needs to be in the agenda decision itself. And similarly, on page 19, Guy was suggesting Well, if you make my suggestion that there's some text on page 19, which again seems to be getting into what I've been thinking of more as finance and economic theory rather than accounting, and it doesn't seem necessary to the flow of the agenda decision itself. So I have two very specific wording changes about the references to IFRS 9, and then a more general observation about whether or not some of the very general statements necessarily need to be in the agenda decision itself.
Thank you, Brian. Jens?
Similar as Brian, I want to pick up on one of the general statements. It's on page 18, and it, I think Guy already touched this. It's about the committee observed that cash is by nature denominated in nominal terms. And I would like to have a reference to IFRS rather than we as committee stating that cash is by nature denominated in nominal terms. So just to be absolutely clear, I fully believe and my understanding is that cash is denominated in nominal terms, but I would love to have a reference to IS 7 or IS 29 that we as committee, we do not state that something is nominal or in real terms, but rather we can reference as committee to IS 7 and IS 29 rather than making this statement. I think it's easily dealt with to put in brackets a reference to IS 7.
Thank you. Carsten.
Yeah, thank you. So I have three small comments. The first one is on the top of page 18. The new underlined sentences, which the second sentence, which starts with, for this to be the case, the real interest rate must represent the benchmark pricing element in setting the floating benchmark rate, thereby creating separately identifiable, that is directly observable and reliable measurable cash flows, cash flow variability in the floating rate instrument. On that one, I have two wording suggestions. The first one is essentially supporting what Brian said. That is, you know, the part in brackets. I would also support to either delete that bit or maybe just delete the word directly, because I don't think there's a requirement, you know, that it must be directly observable. So either delete the brackets altogether or maybe just delete the word directly. And the second suggestion in that same sentence would be before that, where we talk about the benchmark pricing element. I wasn't entirely sure, you know, what a benchmark pricing element is in some, you know, is for a risk component that isn't contractually specified. So my suggestion would be to replace benchmark pricing element with just saying an identifiable pricing element rather than referring to a benchmark pricing element. And then in the next paragraph, where we also again the new insertions, my suggestion would be to, as others have pointed out also, that we change the bit about causation or make it more clear. So my suggestion would be in the sentence that starts with a nominal interest rate, such as LIBOR, may be influenced by expected inflation and so on, that we would clarify in that sentence that there may be some linkage, but not necessarily in the short term. And then in the next sentence, where we say in the brackets that that is there is no causation, that we maybe add that there is no, you know, direct or short-term causation or something along those lines to make it clear that you know, there's no, you know, there's no short-term or direct linkage, but there may be some interdependence in the longer term. So that's it from my side. Just some small wording suggestions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Carsten. So following that, Rihanna, can I hand back to you and Matthias to summarize what you've heard and your reactions to the proposed wording changes?
Yeah. So I think we agree with most of the wording changes to be made. And just to maybe summarize them, I think, you know, starting on page 16, we'll revert to the original wording and basically undo the changes we've made for the agenda decision. like Brian suggested. On page 18, we will, as Carsten suggested, not talk about benchmark pricing, but an identifiable pricing element, which I think is clearer. With regards to the bit between brackets, I think it's better to maybe just delete them because, you know, admittedly, the standard does not say directly observable. So I think it's clearer if we delete that. In the next sentence, or the next paragraph rather, couple of changes. So we'll look at how we could include a reference to IS7 or IS28 around, you know, cash is by nature nominal. I think we'll change, as Guy suggested, to talk about the cash flows of the debt instrument that's being attributed to the risk. So we'll do that. We will, I think I agree with Guy also that the sentence about every currency unit of cash is exposed to inflation maybe no longer works in this context. The original reason we've included that was to say that you can't just say I'm hedging my LIBOR cash flows for changes in inflation, because it's actually every currency unit of the loan that is exchanged but or affected. But you know, I think that sentence no longer fits in that paragraph, so we can take it out. And to the next part, so we'll try and find a way to bring in Carsten's suggestion that it may be influenced by, you know, LIBOR might be influenced by inflation and the real rate over a long period of time. I think we try to hint at that by using, you know, just saying period, but maybe we need to be more specific that it's over a long period. It's not in the short term. And then in the second sentence, that bit between brackets, I think we'll take that out and link it back to what we said in the previous paragraph, being that it's identifiable pricing element. So it would create a greater link. And then moving on to Brian's suggestion, I think we'll delete the paragraph we've added that says the committee concluded the changes in the nominal rate are not attributable. And we'll replace it with Brian's suggestion that the committee concluded that there's no exposure to the variability in cash flows that are attributable to the changes in the real rate. And then link that back to the requirement in paragraph 652B of IFRS 9. On page 19, I think we will... I agree that the paragraph around the real rate not, you know, being the residual component is no longer, doesn't fit into the revised agenda decision. So we can just delete that paragraph. And I think we can also delete the next paragraph and just be clearer in that paragraph about the real rate risk component does not meet the requirements in paragraph 637, so to link it clearer back to what we said in the first bullet points at the beginning. I think those are all the changes that I've heard. I'm not sure if I've missed anything.
Okay. As always, the committee will see the words, so... but nobody's twitching. So hopefully that means that people are comfortable with the suggestions that Rhianna's just taken us on a quick tour through. But we'll again, as always, circulate the words to the committee so you can be sure you understand what's going out. All right, thank you very much. Well done. Tough issue, I think a good paper, as many have said, so well done. I echo everybody's thanks. Okay, so that's the end of agenda paper four. Patrina, given we're still getting used to our new sort of regime of the two-step process between when we finalise agenda decisions and the board sort of negative clearance proposal and things like that, maybe it's just worth reminding the committee and those listening what the sort of next steps are on the IAS 19 and this cash flow hedge accounting agenda decisions that the committee's agreed to move forward with. So what's the next step and when do we see update in the world and that sort of stuff? What's the thinking?
Yeah, so we'll be following, yes, thank you. So we'll be following a similar process to, I suppose, what happened in March around the cloud computing agenda decision. So let me put that now in the context of, yeah, but for the IAS 19 agenda decision and this inflation hedging agenda decision. So what will happen is, yeah, as you said, we'll circulate draft wordings to the committee members and get their agreement on that. What IFRIC update for April that we'll put out next week will include first of all say what it will not include. It will not include the exact wording of these two agenda decisions that the committee has decided to finalize. But what it will instead include for both of those is obviously a brief summary of the issue. It will note that the committee reached its conclusions on those agenda decisions, and it will also note that then the committee is proposing to finalise these agenda decisions and that will be brought forward to the board to ask the board whether, you know, the board objects to them being finalised in accordance with the due process handbook. And we would expect to be able to bring those two, proposed agenda decisions to be finalised to the board at the May meeting. And then it's only assuming that the board were to not object to those agenda decisions, they would get published after the May meeting and get attached to the IFRIC update at that point. And I think importantly, would be dated May. The date of the agenda decisions will reflect the timing of when the board has its discussion about whether it objects to the agenda decisions or not.
Okay, good. So there's no sort of pending agenda decisions floating around that then get sort of reaffirmed word-wise in the public domain. So I think that's just helpful to remind me and everybody else. So thank you for that, Katrina. Okay, are we ready now to move on to the work in progress paper?